Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, we're about 4 minutes from the Champions Classic ending, something like that. And I'm here joined by Matthew Penny, Esquire. I believe that that's your title, correct?
Yeah, for this. That's my official title. Game Theory Esquire. Yeah,
Matthew Penny, Game Theory Esquire. We're going to talk about the Champions Classic. There were a number of prospects on the court in regard to the NBA draft, as there always are when it comes to the Champions Classic, including the guy who's number one on my board, Paolo Banchero, who showed out in Duke's game against Kentucky. We had another player in the top 10 on my board in Ty Washington, who was not very good in this game. So we're going to have some fun kind of diving into what we saw here. We're not going to go super, super long. I can't imagine this will be more than 45 minutes, but you know, when Penny and I start talking, you just never know. Penny,
yeah, it's run it.
It is about to be midnight your time. How are things?
It is midnight my time. Just about to strike 12 and Cinderella loses her shoe or whatever happens there. But I'm kind of prepared for this because I was just in Las Vegas last week and then I took a red eye home. So my body hates me. We may as well pile on and just make it hate me a little bit more.
That's what you have to do in these circumstances. You were out on the West Coast, and I'm sitting here in Melbourne. It's like 3:55 p.m. I'm rolling. It's been raining all day. I'm hoping that it dries out a little bit. Maybe I can go on a little like evening run. That'd be great. But first, we need to podcast. So let's start with this Duke-Kentucky game, because I think that was definitely the more applicable one in regard to NBA scouting. I texted a NBA scout friend of mine midway through the first half and said something like, this is going to be one of the most scouting applicable games that we see all year, if only because of the length and athleticism that was on display in this game. Duke is obviously just enormous. They start like real legitimate NBA size. Trevor Keels is like 6'4", 225 pounds as a two man. You know, Wendell Moore is 6'6", with a 6'11 wingspan at the three. Paolo Banchero is 6'10". Mark Williams is 7 foot with a 7'6" wingspan. AJ Griffin is 6'6" with a 6'11" wingspan. Like, this team runs big. They play big, and it's like having an NBA court out there. And not to be outdone, Kentucky is also pretty big. Like, Ty Washington 6'3" with like 6'10" wingspan. You know, Damian Collins only played 2 minutes in this game, but Collins is enormous. Keon Brooks is 6'7" and looks like a four man, you know, with his length and frame. Oscar Tshiebwe plays like, you know, an underskilled NBA big, just in terms of activity level and strength and length.
Slash pro wrestler,
right?
And I mean that glowingly. Like, you have 17 rebounds, you're a pro wrestler.
Yeah, I mean, the man went for 17 and 19. You know, all credit to Oscar tonight. He was a beast who battled inside with Mark Williams and Paolo Banchero all night. This was one of the more applicable games I think we will see all year in regard to scouting, and Duke won 79-71 in a game that was, to me, just dominated by Paolo Banchero. A lot of people, I think, are going to give Trevor Keels love, and I certainly want to give Trevor Keels his flowers as well. He dropped 25 points. Frankly, I thought his bigger impact was on defense. Like, he was an enormous reason why Ty Washington went 3 of 14 from the field. He just, Ty could not get away from him. He couldn't go through him. There was nothing that could be done there. But the Keels and Banchero show, I'm sure, is going to be the headline here. But everything that Banchero did was just so translatable to what he will have to do in the NBA. It was one of the better opening prospect games that I've seen in the last few years, maybe since the RJ Barrett Zion game where they like blew out Kentucky and just went nuts.
Yeah, it was sort of the way he did it too, because you're right, you watch that first game of Kansas, Michigan State, and two big teams, but then Kentucky and Duke rolled out there. It's like, this is real size on an NBA court at Madison Square Garden.
It was like a different sport.
I don't know if it was as extreme for me, but it definitely stood out. And that was the first thing when Paolo went out there and they're doing their pleasantries before the game. The first note I put was, he looks like an NBA player. And then you look around, yep. It's like everyone kind of looks like an NBA player. But for him, for the prospect game, he was just so comfortable taking off the bounce with either hand, maintaining his balance. When he had those elbow kind of face-ups, he was never in a rush. It was like he kind of jabbed. That first time, he almost like fell over, kept his balance, then went. Then in the second half, he scored on one. The next one, he got a little bit deeper, hit a fadeaway. He looked like he belonged, and then some. Like, not that he's wasting his time in college by any means, but the ways that he was scoring and the kind of change of pace and the rebounding, the intensity, it seemed like this is a guy that is either going to be a solid number one pick or in that battle all year long. I mean, there wasn't anything that stood out where I said, yeah, that, you know, that needs to be fixed. There was one drive he like overextended his arm and got an offensive foul, but that was really it. Like, when the ball left his hand, even from mid-range from those 16-footers, I was surprised when he missed. Like, he was just so fluid in his motions. He was under control with those rips off the rim. And we saw, and we dug into film in the offseason from when he was in the grind session, when he played the Iverson Classic, that he was this initiator. But he would take it, and then he would defer. He would kind of hit up the sideline and say, all right, you guys can handle it. He just played within himself and was still, like you said, just an absolute monster with 22 points and 7 rebounds, and probably would have had more if he didn't cramp up the few times they pulled him from the game, and the size didn't bother him when he was matched up with the monsters across from him either.
Yeah, totally agree. In the first 3 minutes, he had, like, I have a note here that's just like, oh my God, Banchero ISO step back from like 17 feet. Yeah. It was just like pristine footwork to get into a step back. And then to end the first 4 minute session before the first media timeout, he had that grab and go, like, into just his footwork is unbelievable. Like, he like drop stepped and then drove and then like got raked across the arms and somehow like flung a shot toward the rim to at least get to the right line.
Side. Yep.
Just unbelievable. He had an incredible fat pass on the break at like the 14-10 mark, and then had like a drive and dish on the next possession that I think that Duke scored on neither of them. Then he had like a rip through in the first half for to get to the foul line, just like a very professional move when he felt someone's hands like right on it, right across. He was just like, okay, I'm just going to get to the line now because this is easy. He had another one as well where he had just like a Keon Brooks came out and closed out, and it was a really like strong closeout, and Banchero stopped. He surveyed, he attacked with one dribble, drove Brooks way back because Brooks was playing like, you know, like he was going to the basket because he was so concerned about Paulo's driving ability, stopped, pulled up, and just hit like a 16 footer like it was nothing, and it just like didn't even touch the rim. It was just like shit like that all night in situations that were directly translatable to what NBA teams will have him do. I also want to commend Coach K. We'll talk about the first game. I hated everything about the way that Michigan State approached that first game.
Okay.
It was enormously frustrating from a game plan perspective to me. As someone who like bet on Michigan State, obviously, it was funny. Doster was texting me. He was like, it is hilarious watching you tilt this Michigan State game right now. And I was like, you know, I kind of knew it was done by halftime, but it's still pretty frustrating. But in the case of Duke, they really played to Banchero's strengths. And by the way, they played to Trevor Keels' strengths as well. They inverted the offense from time to time. Like, he caught Sevier Wheeler on at least one, maybe two post-ups that were just, you know, easy for him at that point. But he ISO'd Banchero at the elbow and emptied out the side of the court so he had space to go. So the first time they did it against Keon Brooks in the second half, emptied out, you know, jab, step, pull up, swish, right? Second time, Kentucky brings a double, you know, drives, drop steps to the left, step back, pull up, away from the double, and it goes in like it's nothing. Like, it was just like kind of a joke what he was able to do in this game across the board. A very, very impressive showing from Paolo Banchero. And this, none of this even talks about his defense, which was
right. That's the next step.
On point, and it was awesome the whole game, I thought.
Yeah, just the last thing on footwork. Offensively, that first play out of the second half, too, where he had that like quick first step in the post, he bumped, he maintained his composure, his balance, and scored through and finished. It's like, all right, well, that's a different wrinkle than the mid-range pull-ups we saw early in the game. And then on defense, he had some deflections on inbound passes, and then he moved his feet well to get around screens. Keon Brooks, same. I think we're talking about the same thing here a little bit. He like fought around a screen, recovered, cut him back off, and even like he was called for a foul. He like extended but stayed with the play on top, and it's just like the awareness that he has on both sides of the ball. There was just he answered to me any real questions. I mean, you could, if you're really trying to poke holes, you can say, okay, he went 0 for 3 from 3, and I'm not worried about that because the shot looks really smooth and solid, and I think he's going to hit some and going to hit more, but that, I'm not putting my flag in that as something that I'm concerned about at this point.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought that he had a couple of possessions as well where he slid. He was one of the few guys I thought that did okay sliding with Sahvir Wheeler, staying in front of him. He got better at it in the second half, it felt like, even while he was dealing with cramps. Like, I think he kind of recognized the space that he was able to give Sahvir, maybe, because Sahvir is just kind of a non-scorer. Like, I had a couple Kentucky fans get frustrated with me that I called Wheeler a non-scorer. I mean, the guy went 6 for 15 from the field and had 7 turnovers.
right.
I know that
you're saying what happened.
Yeah, like I know that, you know, he had 10 assists, and I thought that he was like the most effective initiator for Kentucky tonight. But you know, this is kind of who Sahvir is. He's going to be a little bit wild and try to make things happen. Let's go to Keels, because Trevor Keels is someone that I saw a decent amount of, but ultimately, I think I would have had him like in the 60s coming into the year on a ranking. And I just don't rank freshmen outside of the top 50 for the most part. It's just kind of not what I do. The only way that they'll end up there is if they decide to go to the G League Ignite. And like, I think I have like Michael Foster outside of the top 50 right now, because I'm not a big Foster guy. But in the case of Keels, I definitely think that he's a top 50 prospect. I do want to see more in terms of his offensive skill set, because I thought that a lot of what he did tonight was taking advantage of mismatches in like bully ball situations, right? Like he was able to bully Sahvir Wheeler. Mm-hmm. He was able to bully Ty Washington. He was able to, like, even in the moments where like Kellen Grady was dealing with him, like he's kind of fucking went through Kellen Grady like it was nothing, right? This isn't to say I'm not excited about Trevor Keels, and I think he's an incredible college basketball player. Like, I want to be very clear about that. He's going to be awesome this year for Duke because he's so physical that even, you know, college players, I think, are going to struggle to deal with him. But in terms of, you know, NBA translation, I do want to see just a little bit more in terms of where his skill set lies before, like, really diving in and being like, yeah, this guy's like definitely a one and done first round pick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we talked about that when we were going through guards for this draft class, and you brought up Trevor Keels. We said, yeah, probably a multi-year guy, and that's why we didn't dive into it more. And he's had some injuries. He hasn't been 100%. His body was kind of up and down, but clearly in great shape. And they said on the podcast, geez, I'm losing my mind, on the show, the broadcast, that he bench pressed.
Well, isn't the broadcast really just a live podcast?
Basically, we're splitting hairs. But he benched 185 pounds 19 times, which is a Duke record. That's like NFL combine numbers for cornerbacks. Like, insane. Yeah. And I had similar thoughts that he was really this competitive power guard, and he showed this strength on his drives baseline. He's going to plow you over, and he's going to get to his spots. And then I did like that. Then he stopped on a dime a little bit to pull up off the bounce, and then this is in the second half. And then they kind of, like, overcommitted. He dumped it off to Theo John. So, like, he has a feel for what's going on out there, but he's just going to have to diversify everything else. He's 1 for 4 from 3. I did like that he wanted the ball when the game mattered. There was about 5 minutes to play, and the lead was cut down to 5, and he took it and scored. But, okay, now what's the next step in the next game when the scout's going to be, he's going, flop a little, take an offensive foul, we're going to go under on screens, let him beat you from 3. So he'll have some questions to kind of fulfill himself, but don't take away anything from a really eye-opening performance and probably popped up on more radars for NBA scouts earlier than anticipated. Certainly for me, and I watched him in high school on the circuit, it was a much better display night one than I would have thought.
Yeah, I loved everything he brought to the table in this game. It was exactly what Duke needed within this game. And in terms of like what his impact will be as a freshman college basketball player this year, like he'll be one of the 15 best freshmen in college basketball this year. It's just that next level leap where, you know, when you're trying to bully Sahvir Wheeler and Ty Washington, it's a little bit different than when you have to go out there and try to like bully Jimmy Butler every night. Right.
It's different.
It's probably not going to work as well.
No, Jimmy Butler's not 5'8", 5'9", 180 pounds.
Yeah. And like I said, like Trevor Keels deserves all of his flowers. He was fantastic tonight. And by the way, again, another guy, I thought his defense was phenomenal. He was a monster on-ball defender. He is a significant reason why Ty Washington went 3 of 14 from the field and generally just struggled to go anywhere. And I think that that's the next place that we go here. I mean, I think I was probably a little bit higher on Ty than what the general consensus is in terms of draft prospects. Did this game change much for me? I mean, a little bit. I would have liked to have seen him not take, you know, 10 mid-range jumpers. Mm. Like that, yeah. That's less exciting to me. Went 0 of 2 from 3. I thought that when he played a bit more unselfishly, I thought he had some really good passing looks. And some of them Kentucky just didn't make. But I thought that, for instance, that little wraparound to, I believe it was Oscar, in the final 2 minutes. Like, that was really an impressive, like, drive, bring the big toward you, wraparound pass using your length to hit Oscar, like, right in the chest, and Oscar goes up and dunks it, right? Yep. It felt like, and, you know, John Calipari mentioned this at the halftime interview, that he was asking Ty to be aggressive and try to do too much. When I like Ty, I like him more as like a connective piece guy that can also be a great playmaker. Like, I don't want him to be the crazy over aggressive guy unless he like really has it going, and then by all means do it. But like, I don't need him taking like 8 or 9 shots in the first half just to prove a point because you're trying to be the guy. I like him best when, you know, he's running a secondary ball screen and is, you know, getting into the middle of the court and the defense is collapsing around him and he knows where to hit reads, right? It's not an accident that he had 0 turnovers tonight, despite the fact that, you know, you can say that a lot of his shot selection was essentially a turnover, right? Like he took a lot of just really, really bad, really, really bad mid-range jumpers that were contested. But when he's making passing reads, I think he's actually really effective. And I'd like to see more of that balance from him as opposed to what it seems like John Calipari wants, which is him being like hyper aggressive as a scorer.
Which Kentucky sort of needs, because who's the alpha out there? Who's like the guy? I mean, tonight you'd probably say Sahvir Wheeler, and I don't know how many games you win like that. I thought Sahvir was really good in the first half, and he kept coming at you. It's like I felt he was doing that lefty scoop layup like every single play, and they couldn't stop it. Just he would miss. Then he got a little bit looser in the second half. But if you look at the Kentucky's two exhibition games, like they were down, they're behind, they're losing at halftime. John Calipari needs somebody to emerge, and Ty's probably the piece or the guy to do that. But he's just more of like a pace type of guy. He's more likely to come off and use a floater out of pick and roll as opposed to taking all the way to the rim and flexing and going at it and being this energy changing guy. And I do think that he was really good at knowing how to use screens to get himself open. Like, he's not going to blow by you, but he sets up his man well, can create space. And similar to what you said, I did like the way that him and Sahvir kind of complemented each other on the floor as drivers and then relocating and being like a secondary initiator. But it did still also create those tough and off-balance shots. And some of them were end of the shot clock early in the game. They didn't have much flow in their offense. And that's why I was lower than... And I don't think you should sell yourself out too much. Like, everyone kind of has Ty middle of the first round right now. I was just more hesitant because the shot for me, I'm just not sold on it yet. He doesn't always seem square. He airballed the three that ended up being like a turnover for a touchdown for a wide open layup down the other end. And then we talked about the bully ball, but Trevor Keel's like ran over him a few times, and it just shows how far away he is. Yep. Because as much as we say that Trevor Keel's can't play that way, it's sort of the same for Ty Ty. Like, you got to be able to body up for a guy that's going to be a stronger guard. If you're not a, and there was a lot of stuff circulating on Twitter last week that Ty Ty's the point guard. I don't know why people say he's a combo. I still see he's a combo. I don't think he's your main point guard. So if you're a combo and you're guarding twos and stronger guys like that in the NBA, you're going to be able to hold your ground. And that'll come with time. Just overall, just a little bit underwhelming. I liked them a lot at Arizona Compass Prep. I saw him play a lot. I didn't necessarily think right off the rip it's a one-and-done lottery thing. I'm not writing it off. This was one game, one performance. Freshmen have jitters. We saw that in the first game. We'll talk about in a minute. But just if he doesn't have that burst and the jumper's not there, how else can he impact the game if he shoot 2-for-14 and the shot's not falling?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of why, like, the name Chauncey Billups has always stuck with me when, you know, scouts have had conversations with me about him, right? Like, they've brought up the idea of him being, like, more of a combo in the vein of Chauncey Billups, where you probably want a second point guard out there with him, but, you know, he can handle some of the load, right? Which is essentially what you're saying when you say combo guard.
Right.
Yeah. He does see the floor really well. He processes the game really, really well as a passer. I just wonder if the role is being roles a little bit different than what his idealized role is here, if he's going to be asked to do that. And, you know, you bring up the idea of who can take some of the load off of his hands. I am surprised that Kentucky utilized Kellen Grady solely as a floor spacer in this game. Because you go back and you watch his tape at Davidson, like, there's a lot more shit to him than that.
Oh, totally. Like, totally. Same thing in prep school. He definitely has more stuff off the bounce. And I was thinking the same exact thing. I don't want to say he's been relegated to it, but he was this floor spacer, and he hit some big shots to kind of space things out and create those driving lanes for Sevier Wheeler. But he can do more. And toward the end of the game, in the run out of time, he played a little bit of catch up, and I think he missed like one runner. But he wasn't really called upon to self-create and make really scoring options and opportunities for other players, other than, hey, catch and shoot, stand over here, and then just move and spread the floor out a little bit.
Yeah, let's go to some of the other guys here. Mark Williams, you know, had 5 points and 7 rebounds, but he was just a monster defensively. Anytime that Kentucky went in, like, inside when he was on the court, it felt like there was very little chance that the ball was going to go on the rim. I had him at 20 coming into the year. I think he still looks like a potential first-round pick to me. He had 3 blocks and 2 steals in 18 minutes. He dealt with a little bit of foul trouble because of a couple of phantom foul calls. But everything I saw from Mark Williams in the way that he mixed with Paolo was pretty strong to me.
Has a great nose for the ball in the glass, too. Uses both hands to kind of tip it around and back to himself. He caught and finished one alley-oop at the rim. Not a huge slight, but with more talent around him and offensive options around him than last year, I thought he kind of looked more like the Mark Williams coming out of high school, and not like he had some performances last year. He's spitting out double doubles, and we're like, I don't know, is this like maybe like a top 15-ish guy in a year or two? Like, it hasn't been that progressive jump in development. It's not his fault. It's more like they can spread the wealth a little bit in scoring opportunities because of, they have just like better players around him, where he's not going to be called upon to have those type of games for them to win.
AJ Griffin is a guy that I have, like, you know, 6'5", 6'6", maybe something like that. Still coming back from a sprained knee, played 11 minutes in this game. It just feels like Coach K isn't like super comfortable putting him on the court yet. Like, doesn't have like a great sense of where his most effective areas are within the construct of the rest of the team. I think that, you know, that's fine. I'm not totally surprised. I kind of wrote in the betting preview I did for this game that I wasn't real sure what to expect from AJ Griffin in this one, just because it kind of seemed like it just was unclear what they were going to do and how they were going to roll with him in this. And
didn't really have his legs under him, but one for the injury, but he just didn't seem comfortable in playing his game. He was more like, he in that second half, he cut sort of like on the baseline, caught that pass from Theo John to finally score. And then he got like an over the back offensive foul out of a free throw. He was just sort of this like energy booster, and that's not his game. He's much more skilled and more well-rounded than that. And you could tell he wasn't really 100%. And I'm not mad because you do got to get back to health, but the way Duke was able to win with a guy that we're talking about in the top 10 potentially not being on the court, you got to take that as a victory. And then even like you look at Duke's general shooting numbers, they're 1-for-12 from three. They beat Kentucky by 8. Pretty wild. I mean, you alluded to that in the text too. Like, Kentucky didn't go on a run when Duke's three best players were on the bench. So I think Duke has something well formulated and cooking out there for today anyway.
Yeah, that's literally what I was going to ask you. Was what did you think Duke shot from three? How many threes do you think Duke made in this game?
I didn't know until I was prepping and looked late. I said, oh my god, like they don't have passing lanes, I guess, and they shot 8%, 1-for-12, which is insane.
Yeah, that was absolutely insane. For Kentucky, Damian Collins played 2 minutes. It just looks very clear that he is not ready to play yet, which is fine. They have to hope that by midseason that he can get some time on the court. But you know, this is a guy that I've kind of told people, like, maybe a one and done, maybe not. He's still very raw, obviously, like a pogo stick, and can out high point the ball on anyone. I hope that they're able to give him some run over the course of their next, you know, 5 games, where they play Robert Morris, Mount St. Mary's, Ohio, who picked up a big win against Belmont tonight. That's actually kind of a danger game for Kentucky, I think. I would watch that. And then they play Albany, North Florida, Central Michigan, and Southern. So they have some games here to really figure some things out, and I would hope Damian Collins gets a minute or two there to be able to really get some court time and get his legs under him a little bit.
It wasn't the coming out party of last year when Isaiah Jackson had 7 points, 12 rebounds, 8 blocks. And you said, yeah, maybe this guy's got a chance to be a first round pick. I mean, Damian Collins went out there and Mark Williams like immediately big boyed him. And I said, yep. Yeah, I don't know how long it's going to last out here. And he didn't last too long. You said it. He has all the tools. He has a chance to be there, but it's not like the snap of the fingers. He's ready to go right now.
All right. And the last guy here that we should talk about is, well, let's talk about the Sevier and Oscar show. I mean, Sevier Wheeler was effective insofar as Duke really struggled to stay in front of him. Beyond that, I don't really, I mean, like, this was just like not my kind of game, I guess. You know, missed 9 shots, had 7 turnovers, only scored 16 points. Like, you combine the missed shots and turnovers, and that's the same number of points that Sevier scored. Yeah, he had 10 assists, and some of the passes were like flash passes. Like, he hit two unreal cross-corner kickouts where I was like, oh my god, like, that is filthy. This is something different than what Kentucky has had for the last couple years, but I don't know, man. I think that, like, the more they can share the load across their backcourt with Sevier, Ty-Ty, and Kellen, and getting Kellen, like, into the mix there more, the better off that Kentucky will be.
It was kind of the Sevier Wheeler thing, and that was my hesitation when he transferred there. I said, ooh, I don't, like, 7.4 assists to 4.4 turnovers last year at Georgia. Like, those numbers got to go down. I'll give him his due. I thought he really
A&M, I believe, but yeah.
Right. I'm sorry. I don't know why I said Georgia. But yeah. Am I losing my mind? No, Sevier Wheeler was at Georgia.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Who am I like, thinking of? It was at A&M.
What time is it? I'm like,
hey, yeah, he was definitely at Georgia. My brain's broken.
Yeah, it's fine. It's 3 o'clock for you. I thought that he kept him in the game, though, in the second half. He had that second half run to get him to single digits. He has end-to-end real speed. He looks, this is going to sound nuts, it looks a little bit more under control than it was a year ago before the transfer. But it's hard when a guy turns it over that often that you trust him to make those decisions when the game matters. He was very good at pick and roll early and kind of finding that roll man and placing passes well. He's definitely fearless despite being the size he is. But, you know, as a 22% shooter from three last year and he hit some ones early, there's just a lot of holes there for him to carry the load of Kentucky season.
And then finally, Oscar goes for 17 points, 19 rebounds, had 12 offensive rebounds. I mean, just like hats off to Oscar, right? Like, was the sole reason to me that Kentucky stayed in this game as long as they did. I thought he was phenomenal for the Wildcats tonight. He was going up against the biggest front line in college basketball and grabbed 12 offensive rebounds. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, unreal game.
Yeah, it was second and third chances, and it's interesting because he's not like the most super skilled guy either. He just kind of like wills it into happening, and he doesn't have like this real quick twitch pop either. It's more of like a low jump, but he gets there. I mean, he rotated for a block on Keels too, and I just think he's this monster of a man with a hulking frame, and he makes you pay for it. But it's this old school tough style of big, not necessarily overly excited as an NBA prospect, but don't want to take away what he did tonight. One other guy I do want to mention before we move on is Wendell Moore from Duke. He, a year ago, kind of preseason-ish, we were like, is he like a top 20s guy? He had a bad year. He was not good, and he was on the floor. And I'm like, I don't know what this guy does, but he looked a lot more bouncier out there. He looked confident as a runner, as a finisher. He came off a big Theo John screen. He put his man in jail and hit a mid-range jumper. And Jay Billis has said that Duke changed the way he runs, like fixed the way his feet turn. And I don't know. He played with like this level of belief in himself where he hit this quick face-up jumper. It was all like the high school filmish Wendell Moore stuff. So that was encouraging for him as potentially a prospect this year too.
Yeah, and I really loved Wendell Moore coming out of high school. I thought like legitimate potential first round pick as a one and done. He was very young, very long arms. It just didn't work for the first 2 years, but you know, that doesn't mean it's not going to work this year. Like you said, he looks really good. He looks really polished and confident out there. Obviously started to cramp in the second half, and it looked like his cramps may have been a bit worse than what Paulo's were. We'll see what it looks like the rest of the year. He has to shoot it. Like, that's ultimately the thing. He's going to have to shoot it from three. He went 0-2 from three tonight, and that's the problem there, right? Oscar's not really an NBA prospect. You know, that's super interesting to me. You know, he could be a backup center at some point just through work ethic. I mean, he has an innate sense of just where the ball is going to go off the glass. It's kind of remarkable and unbelievable. I think that we've probably talked enough about this game.
One more add-on here, because it's never over, because people never really graduate high school on time, and your graduating class doesn't matter. Shaedon Sharpe, who's the number one player in the country, will be enrolling at Kentucky in January. Hasn't said whether he's going to play or not, so if you need help
he
alluded to, like, I'll do whatever they need to do. So my point is, like, even Kentucky's roster could look different here in a couple months.
I thought that my understanding is that people think he's not going to play.
Yeah, it always starts that way. Then you get to campus, and it's a we'll see. So it's they have a lot of players. They have a lot of transfers. I don't know where he would fit in. I'm sure they'd find a place for him. But just something to keep your antennas up for, because things change here very, very quickly.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I would be surprised to see Shaedon Sharpe play this year. Like, we've seen Kentucky go down this road before. Like, they did it with Hamidou Diallo when Diallo enrolled early, and you know, they could have used him that year and he still didn't play. I would be surprised, I think, if Shaedon Sharpe played. But like you said, these things change. Let's talk about a different kind of performance than what we're talking about with the NCAA tournament. They want to help your performance in the bedroom. Joy mode, you know, just like on the basketball court, sometimes you might have an off night. Maybe you're playing okay and you want to take your game up a level even. That's where joy mode is going to come in. Don't grab some over-the-counter pills that you see at a gas station. They're going to often contain unregulated chemicals, suggest unsafe doses, carry the risk of several other health problems down the road. That's why we've partnered with Joy Mode. Whether you're looking to spice up your intimate moments or increase your confidence in the bedroom, Joy Mode makes all natural and science-backed supplements dedicated to helping men perform better across their core functions. Their trademark product, the Sexual Performance Booster, is every man's solution for increased performance. It's like a pre-workout, but for sex. And get this, all ingredients have been assessed in peer-reviewed journals and researched in humans. Imagine this, it comes in a palm-sized packet, like your favorite electrolyte powder. Just simply mix it with 6 to 8 ounces of water 45 minutes before sexual activity begins, and you're going to watch the magic unfold. Redefine your intimacy and go to use joymode.com for 20% off with code GAMETHEORY. That's GAMETHEORY. That's 20% off and free shipping with code GAMETHEORY. Not only is this the only supplement you'll need in the bedroom, but it also supports blood vessel support, cardiovascular and heart health, athletic performance, blood pressure, and general erection function. So why settle for anything less? Whether you're happy or unhappy with your performance in the bedroom, why not perform even better with Joy Mode? Let's go to this Michigan State and Kansas game, because very different style of play. I'll be honest, it felt like both of those teams were just like a little bit of a lower level to me than both Kentucky and Duke. Like, no disrespect to Kansas, who won that game going away and was very impressive, but it felt like outside of Osai Agbaji, there wasn't a whole lot there for me where I was like blown away by what they were doing.
Wasn't blown away. I Agbaji, we'll talk about here at length. It was interesting, and I laugh because it did have an NCAA tournament feel. And what I mean by that is when you watch NCAA tournament games on TV, or if you're lucky enough to go in person, that first round, first game, the arena is like half full. And you look around, you're like, this is kind of weird. Like, where is everybody? It's like, oh, well, the better games in 3 hours, they're still at the bar, or they're not there yet. And it was like that. And I was like, man, I don't know if it's like COVID protocol or people just aren't in their seats. And then the next game starts and it's packed. So it even had that, like, just a step below, like the undercard to the main event type of feel, just from like the initial jump ball too.
So let's talk about Osai, because I think that is by far the most relevant thing that happened in this game. Osai Agbaji had a career high 29 points, 3 of 6 from 3, 9 of 17 overall, got to the line 8 times. I don't know this for a fact. I would bet you that him getting to the line 8 times, if it's not a career high, it's probably up there for him. And it's a statement on how much more comfortable, polished, poised he looks as a ball handler and as a creator, that he was just so, everything he did was so assured. This was a guy that, like, I'm sure people have heard me talk about him before that listen to the show, like, it always seemed like the gears were turning when he had the ball and when he was like making defensive rotations early in his career. The defense figured itself out last year. He was really good defensively, but when he got the ball tonight, it was attack, attack, attack. There was no pause. There was no gears that were going. And this is a guy that's always had all of the skills and tools to be a first round pick. He's 6'5". He's like 220 pounds. He's got long arms. Like, I think he's like a 6'9.5" wingspan. He shoots the ball. Everything is there for him to become what he could become, and I had him as a top 40 guy coming into the year because of that. I do think that he is someone that, just off of this single game, I would be comfortable raising into the first round, because what we saw was actually translatable to an NBA court in terms of the shooting and floor spacing, in terms of the way that he attacked closeouts, the way that he was comfortable off the bounce, the way he was comfortable making decisions, and the defensive ability as well, which was also terrific in this game.
So your free throw assessment, I'm just looking up here as we're recording. Last year, the most free throws attempted was 6 in a game, and that was against Gonzaga in the first game of the year last year. So your Spuddy senses are correct. I agree with you in terms of bumping the first round, and the reason is this. This wasn't like he had some like crazy, just good shooting game. It was the same Osai Agbaji from last year. It looked different. It looked like he actually listened to the criticisms, diversified his game a little bit. If you talk to people around Kansas, fans and what have you, their always criticism was he just drifts. he's good. He's trick or treat. You don't know what you're getting. I didn't think he drifted at all. When my first notes, we started the game, was like, oh, he's kind of jacking. Like, he hit his first catch and shoot three. Then he drove the next play. He took a three the next after. He seemed very eager to score. And then he said,
yeah, you texted me that. That's right.
And he just settled in and he started making threes. And he just like redefined himself as this downhill attacking guy. And then two like really fluid plays. One was like the rip and run off the rim. He strides out to half court, kind of slows down, spins, and finishes. Then another time it was the advance pass. He catches it and goes behind his back before he puts it on the floor and then goes up. Yeah. Just the fluidity of that. And then the athletic gifts of they have a dunk drawn up, set play, ATO, and then a steal and dunk on the next possession. I'm like, all right, well, that's a good segment. Another dunk out of baseline out of bounds. He's just playing with more of this multiple gear attack and pace on his drives. And then on defense, he's got a great body, good wingspan. He's comfortable switching on the perimeter. It's kind of like that NBA archetype that, but I was high on him last year, and you and I kind of went back and forth, but I'm not going to like toot my own horn. I meant highs in like, yeah, maybe in the 40s range. And then he pulled out and said, okay, that kind of makes sense for him to go back. A guy that made a decision to go back to school, and although it's just one night and two halves of basketball, it looks like that was the right move for him rather than try to go pro, spend some time in the G League. Like, this is the best platform for him to show how much he's developed and evolved himself within the last few months.
Yeah, could not agree more. I think he is in for a monster year. And here's the other thing about this, and we'll talk about Kansas in general now. I've always been pretty skeptical of Remy Martin. I really liked the way that Remy Martin attacked this game. He distributed in the early going. He was happy to be the passer. He was happy to be like the the point guard. He and DeJuan Harris kind of split that role early on in the game. And then in the second half, he went and got it, right? Like, he took nine second half shots.
He got it, yeah.
And I didn't think that too many of them were out of rhythm. Maybe a couple of them were, but I think that him getting the rest of his teammates involved at a high level is a much better way, and starting the game that way, getting everyone kind of into the game, is a much better way for Kansas to attack, and then letting him finish late, letting him go get it late. And then people that were there, media members that were there, said that he said all the right things in the post game as well.
Yep.
Like that's exactly what that's how he wants to attack. That's how he wants to go about it. So, yeah, very, very impressive. And the other thing about, if Oshai is this guy and is their legitimate primary scorer who can be a 20-point-per-game guy, 19-point-per-game guy, and Jalen Wilson can be what we think Jalen Wilson's going to be, you know, somewhere between 13 and 15 points per game. Well, then you're kind of sliding Remy Martin down in the pecking order a little bit to where, you know, maybe instead of having to be the top guy, because we thought that he'd be the top guy just due to his personality, right?
Yeah, well, preseason now, player of the year.
Right. Like, now he's, you know, the second and third guy, even at times he's the third guy. And that's a much better role for him, I think. At Kansas, like, he's going to be a little bit more capable of playing well within that role. So I really liked what I saw from Kansas, and I'm really excited to, you know, see what this team looks like when Jalen Wilson comes back. In terms of prospects for them, like, look, I don't really think they have any other prospects, if we're just being candid. Christian Brown is interesting. Like, yep. You know, Jalen Wilson is interesting, but he didn't play tonight. So, yeah, you know, I don't know what else to say here with Kansas in regard to the NBA.
Well, in terms of the Remy stuff, it was watching it play out the last few weeks, because when he was at Arizona State, I mean, they weren't good last year. They had Josh Christopher, they had Marcus Bagley, and just it didn't work. And I don't know if it was just role allocation, jealousy. I have no idea, but just the pieces didn't fit. And I read somewhere, like, during the first exhibition game, Bill Self kind of like lost his mind at some of Remy Martin's shots. And I was joking with a buddy. I'm like, has he ever watched Remy Martin play? This is like kind of what he does. And then I saw a Jeff Borzello tweet during the game that he didn't shoot his first 11 minutes, which is like incredible.
Yep.
If you've watched this volume guy who averaged 19 points per game last year, then he scored off that elevator screen and does the full Remy Martin show in the second half when somebody probably said, like, hey, man, we need you to go get it. View of Remy Martin scoring 15 points on 5 of 9 shooting, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 turnovers. That's an enormous win if like we said, you're adding back Jalen Wilson here in a couple weeks, who's a projected late first-round guy. And, yeah, Christian Brown, there's draft fans of him. It wasn't a great performance by him. I mean, he's going to make his calling off shooting. He had 2 air balls. He was better once he settled down the second half. He had a drive and one short turnaround jumper. And he struggled, too, with the game plan early for Kansas. It was smart. Was let's just feed David McCormick every single play and wear him down. They'll kick it out and hit it. And he just never really, like, got going. The guy, and we don't have to spend much time on here, he just played a few minutes, but Zach Clements, I think, has a chance at a couple years. Hit a 3, posted up, anticipated a steal, had some pick and pop stuff, good footwork, but he's nowhere near ready for this year's draft. And and they're just always going to be well coached. Dave McCormick was better in time. He's still way too mechanical, but he has this confidence when he makes a good play on offense or defense, then he'll post up really hard and can feed him, and he's going to dunk and flex. I like Kansas, man. I like the pieces. I didn't know how it would look, but they look crisp. I don't want to say midseason form, but they looked a step ahead of Michigan State tonight.
They did, and let's talk about Michigan State. I mentioned before that I hated everything about the way Michigan State approached this game. Part of that is probably due to the fact that they got just abhorrently bad guard play in this game. Tyson Walker was very bad. He was just not very good in this game. It looked like, you know, he's from the New York area, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, Christ the King, and then he went to New Hampton.
Yeah, it looked like he was maybe, like, pressing in front of the home crowd. And then on top of it, like, I think Kansas's guards did well ball pressuring as well. But it just looked like Tyson Walker was pressing out there.
It was weird about Tyson Walker, though, because he was more of, like, this table-setting point guard in high school and on the grassroots circuit. And I thought, you know what, probably like an A-10 level guy at the time. And then he crushed it at Northeastern. He averaged 19 points per game. And I thought, I had an NBA scout text me during the game, like, Tyson got swallowed up out there. And it was weird because he had 2 points. He was 1 for 3 shooting. And I looked it up because I'm like, this is not his game in college. That's the second fewest attempts in his career. The only time with fewer was 2 years ago. He played 5 minutes with 1 shot against Drake. I'm guessing he got injured because he played 5 minutes. And there just had been so much press and positivity about him being the best player in practice and how good he was going to be. So I don't know if it was the New York thing. I don't know if he just got swallowed up with the size of the Kansas guards, but just didn't look like himself out there.
Yeah, I don't think it was – like, I didn't think Remy played, like, incredible defense on him because for the most part, they slotted Remy on him and DeJuan Harris on – Max Christie, because Harris is like a little bit more of a bulldog at the point of attack, and they probably thought that that would bother Christie a little bit more, and to an extent I think they were proven right. But the thing about Michigan State's approach to this game that I hated was Kansas switches a lot of screens, right? They don't switch every screen. Like, they don't get McCormick out away from the rim all that often if they can help it,
control it. Yep.
But they switch a lot off the ball 1 through 4. They switch on the ball a lot 1 through 4. I don't understand why they weren't trying to find more mismatches involving guys like Gabe Brown attacking a small guy, Joey Hauser attacking, Max Christie attacking smaller guys. I thought that, you know, one time they got Malik Hall on a mismatch against Christian Brown on the block, and Malik got a good look. He just got called for a foul, if I remember correctly. It was either a foul or he just, like, missed the shot, one of the two. But I thought that when they did go to, like, the size-based mismatches on the perimeter as opposed to trying to, like, post their bigs like Marcus Bingham and Julius Marble.
Right.
Yeah,
because that's what Kansas wants you to do, because, like, Dave McCormick doesn't have the best feet on the perimeter. So they were going, again, just like post feed for post feed. I didn't necessarily get that either.
Yeah, like, I'm kind of trying to find the numbers as we talk. I don't know if I'm even going to be able to do it because, you know, the game ended a while ago. They might have it logged on Synergy. Just looking at the play types here, Michigan State, they have 12 post-up, like, finished possessions here versus only having hit the roll man 4 times, and I'd bet 3 of those are pick and pops by Joey Hauser. They had, let's see here, 10 shots off of screens, despite the fact that you have Gabe Brown and Max Christie on the wings, both of whom are excellent shooters. Like, it just seemed like a really, really poor strategy for me in terms of like generating offense. The only thing that they did more than post up was just like have their ball handler, like AJ Hoggard, Hogard, I guess his name is, I'm thinking about it, AJ Hogard, like attack out of ball screens. That was really kind of it. Like, I mean, it was not a great offensive showing. And we should talk about, you know, from an NBA perspective, the main guy for Michigan State is Max Christie, another guy that I'm very, very high on entering the year. I mean, they just didn't run anything for him. Like, no. You hear everything, like, you know, Max is expected to be like our go-to guy. He's going to be the number one option in our offense. Like, Tom Izzo has not tamped down the Max Christie hype at all. They just didn't run anything for him. Like, I don't know what the plan was there, and they didn't run anything for him, despite the fact that he had a 6 foot tall guy guarding him in Dwan Harris. Like, Dwan Harris is a tough defender, don't get me wrong. Like, he's tenacious, but Max Christie can shoot over the top of Dwan Harris. Like, I just didn't know what the plan was there.
He still had 10 shot attempts. He's 3 for 10. He had 9 points, 2 for 4 from three. 3 rebounds, 2 turnovers, just looked like a freshman. He did. I mean, he missed his first couple jumpers. I like his feet. He kind of ripped through well baseline and missed, and he didn't worry about it. Like, he kept firing. He wasn't scared. He finally knocked down, like, his fifth shot from the top of the key. And then he kicked out a shot or two, which I thought was the right decision, which he didn't force. Like, some of those shots that he passed up to kick out at high school at Rolling Meadows in Illinois, he'd just like go up because he would do everything. So you could tell that he sort of like evolved his game already under Coach Izzo. And Coach Izzo had alluded to that in practices and talked to NBA scouts that he pulled him and said, hey, you know, you're not going to take as many wild shots here. That's not the way we do things. But yeah, there wasn't like a ton of stuff necessarily drawn out for him. He did kind of have like a baby hook in the lane. He missed, but I liked how he used his length to extend. He cut baseline the second half, kind of made his own look for a short lay-in. And similar to Ty Ty, just overmatched strength-wise, even from like the guard position. We were texting during the game, like he had to get a rebound, just kind of get like knocked out of the way. Yep. I'm not worried. I like the tools. I like the shot-making. I like the offensive second side creation that he's able to do. Just it's going to take time. Like the concerns I had were still there, but it's more just about like physical concerns as opposed to like his actual basketball ability.
Yeah, and by the way, like this doesn't get easy for Michigan State. Like they play Western Michigan their next game, but they play Butler in basically a week because today's Wednesday now. The week after that, they play Loyola Chicago, who's going to fucking get in his shit. Basically, the week after that, they play Louisville, who, you know, those guys are going to try and really get in his jersey and bother him. So we're going to learn a lot about Max Christie in the coming weeks here. I don't understand why their offense wasn't, as opposed to like having Christie stand in the corner for the most part and like baseline cut and wait for spot ups. Like, I was waiting for, okay, let's run some like pin downs for Christie and Gabe Brown, right? To try and get either mismatches to drive or just open 3-point shots, right? Those are the opportunities for a advantage and like the ability to create an advantage that I thought Michigan State had in this game because of the lack of Jalen Wilson. Like, you go 6'7", 6'8", 6'8" across the front court, not counting the five. So from the 2 through 4 across the wings, I'm sorry. Whereas Kansas is going what, 6'6", 6'5", 6'5" in the case of Oshai and Christian Brown, maybe 6'6" with Christian Brown. Like, you just have so much space to be able to do different stuff. And I just had no idea what their offensive game plan was. And I'm sure that maybe they could have gotten into more of an offensive game plan had Tyson Walker played better. And, you know, had they been able to get more out of maybe like Jaden Akins, I guess. I don't know. But it just never felt like I knew what their coherent plan was offensively in this game.
Needed more from Gabe Brown, too. I was kind of like hoping he would have a breakout. He was just a quiet 10 points. He hit a three off like a clean look off of a screen. I like the jumper. He turned the corner once and had a decent interior post pass for a bucket. But I didn't think he was assertive. I didn't think he looked for his own shot enough. And other than A.J. Hogard, who commend him for getting in shape and looked much quicker and hasn't had much more of a initial burst, there wasn't that offensive spark that Michigan had and really needed to stay in that game.
No, I agree with that. Okay. One other guy I do want to mention here. I've always kind of liked Bobby Pettiford. I thought he was really good in the minutes he played tonight. He played 11 minutes, and I thought he made a real impact in this game. Like, aggressive on-ball defense. He was a really, really smart decision maker and passer at the point. I think that he has a chance to actually like be useful for them. Like, I liked his minutes way more than I like Joseph Yesufu's minutes.
Yeah, and Bill Self is heat praise on him and saying like he really has a chance to be a special player at Kansas. I thought he was very tough too. Like he just kind of like bodies you in the lane and tries to rebound and made the most out of the 10 minutes. You knew that he was out there on the court when he was out there. It wasn't like he was hiding in the corner and hoping that the ball got swung to him. Like there were a lot of minutes.
Yeah, I agree. And then KJ Adams is a guy that kind of flashed defensively in this game too. Maybe it happens for him, maybe it doesn't, but we'll see. Okay, if we were ranking the four teams tonight, I would say probably definitely Duke number one. I would say Kansas and Kentucky are close for me. Like I'd say
Kansas. I'd say Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, Michigan State.
I would definitely say Kansas ahead of Kentucky, but I think Michigan State was just such a level below Kentucky tonight that it's hard for me to tell. And that Kentucky Duke game was just such a higher level basketball game in terms of the athleticism out there. It just looked like it was played at a different speed. You know what I mean? Like it really did.
It did feel that way. And I know, and I thought, and I think Bill Self even said, like, we're a little bit overrated for how high we are. I thought they lived up to it. I mean, I don't want to – Michigan State didn't look great. I did think Kansas did, though. And I don't know if you're going to get superhero performances from Oshai Igbaji, but if you have that, if you have a dialed-in Remy Martin, if you have a real post threat in Dave McCormick, if you have Jalen Wilson coming back, Christian Brown didn't give you much – that's a pretty good nucleus for a team in the Big 12 and certainly to make a run for a national championship, too.
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay. Penny, do you have any other strong thoughts here before we get out of here?
Do I have any other strong thoughts? Yeah, I don't. Who plays at 11:30 on Friday? What kind of cruel and unjust punishment? What did I do to deserve that? UCLA, who is it? UCLA Villanova, 11:30 Friday night. I mean, I know for you, you're probably like stretching and getting your run in, but that's a tough one for the East Coast for us over here.
I'll say I'm like not super excited about that. That's like a 6:30 game for me. That's like a normal like game time for me. Like that's not or no. It's not 6:30. It's it'd be like 3:30 or 4:30 for me. And it won't end until like 6:30, 7 o'clock probably. So like I'm not like wildly excited by that, to be honest. Like I'd rather have the afternoon because
the season has started and it's so early in the year and Villanova, UCLA is second in the country, Villanova is fourth in the country. Let's do it. But it's tough for us East Coast guys. We'll survive, but it's tough.
Yeah, and did you watch any of the Villanova game tonight?
I watched about 10 minutes of the second half. They're up by a million. They're doing jump stops, aerial possession. Justin Moore is really good.
Yep.
Tough to kind of get a read when you're up by 40, 50, but I think he had like 27 points. He looked very solid out there.
Yeah, I caught like a decent amount in the first half. Really liked what I saw from Justin Moore. Really liked what I saw from Brandon Slater, actually, as well.
4 for 6 from the field, I think. He was good.
Yeah, he was 5 of 7 from 3 in that game. That. Made a bunch of threes. You know, if he can shoot like that, I do think it changes things for them a little bit. Colin Gillespie was just, you know, every bit of what we would expect from him. They played Mount St. Mary's, so, you know, don't get too enthused. But I thought they played well, and I'm excited to see that game against UCLA.
There were some early upsets, too. Navy knocked off Virginia. Western Illinois beat Nebraska. I'm trying to think of the other one. So
well, we've the, already the big one. The big one was Ohio State almost falling to Akron.
So funny. So I'm watching. Yeah, I'm focused in on Champions Classic, but I see the score, so I flip over, and John Gross is the head coach at Akron. I'm looking up his record, and he'd never won at Ohio State when he was at Illinois. So, of course, I'm like, great tweet, fired up, ready to go. So I'm ready to hit send. I'm like, just end the game. And then Zed Key, like, screens his own man because they're switching everything. They hit him in the middle. It's wide open. I'm like, ah, son of a – yeah.
Oh, how freaking good was that screen by Zed Key on that final play?
It was so smart.
Like, the more I watched it, everyone was talking about how great the – like the play call was by Holtman. I was like, yeah, it was a great play call, mostly just because Zed Key set an incredible screen.
Yeah, you like, still got to do it. He kind of screened like two guys and then like screened his own guy and they like closed out too hard to the perimeter and just slipped. And I was like, 0.3 seconds left, nothing you can do.
Yeah, and I also want to call out Alabama. That was probably, outside of Duke, the best performance of the night tonight. Alabama kicked the absolute shit out of Louisiana Tech.
Who's a good team?
Louisiana Tech is expected to compete for the Conference USA title, be like a potential 12 seed, 13 seed in the NCAA tournament if they win that title. Alabama just went in and beat the absolute piss out of them. That was...
They're doing some things
The little
there,
bit
man.
Of it I watched, I was like, whoa, this is better than what I thought it
would be.
They're winning, and they're
kicking butt on the recruiting trail too.
Yeah, no, they play a fun brand of basketball.
And I guess the other, I know it's versus Dixie State, but Chet Holmgren was great. Just the highlights I saw. I didn't watch the game. 14 points, 13 rebounds, 7 blocks, 6 assists. Did have 5 turnovers, but lived up to that early billing as a guy who kind of stuffs a stat sheet from across the board.
Yeah, that's a guy. Like, I just didn't watch any of that game, to be honest. Like, I don't know what to say there. The numbers look great for Chet, though. I'm excited to watch it.
Yeah, he looked good, and you know, I want to watch Auburn. Jabari Smith had 8 points. So it's good that we now have tape. We have games to watch. We have stuff to circle back on, and we're not just making up top 100 lists of old film that we're just guessing on. We're not guessing, but educated decisions more so.
Yeah, college basketball tomorrow and Thursday is not particularly strong. Like, the best game in those 2 days is probably Buffalo, Michigan, I would say. It's not going to be incredible. Like, I'm a little bit excited to watch, like, Maryland against George Washington. Like, that might be exciting on Thursday. But then on Friday, we're back. We get Villanova, UCLA, we get San Diego State, BYU, we get SMU, Oregon, which I think is a sneaky fun game, and then Saturday we get Gonzaga, Texas, as well as just a couple other like sneaky fun games, like maybe USC, Temple in Philadelphia could get kind of weird and funky. I think that maybe like Georgia plays Cincinnati. Shout out Georgia for coming back and getting the win against FIU tonight, which was on its way to disaster for Tom Crean before they decided to come back.
That FIU hit a 3 to cover at the buzzer too. We're all the way in college basketball. It's the season here.
I'm so excited. Okay, let's get Penny to bed, because this man is at 1 o'clock a.m. in Massachusetts right now, coming off of a weekend in Vegas.
We're for the people. Yes, coming off of a weekend in Vegas. So I'll recover. It's got a few days, but I will get there.
Oh, boy. All right. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe. Do everything you can to support the show. We will be back probably Friday with some more NBA stuff. But until next time, we will talk soon. Bye.